Welcome to the Gymea Baptist Church Sermon Podcast. We're so glad you're listening to the pod and trust that this message encourages your heart and faith today. At GBC, we're all about partnering with God in the renewal and restoration of all things. And it's our hope that through these sermons, you'll discover the life-changing power of Jesus. If you'd like to join us in person or online or find out more, check out our website at gymeabaptist.org.au.
Morning, church. Time to take a deep breath because it's a long reading. Genesis 27, 5 to 24. Now Rebekah was listening as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me some game and prepare me some tasty food to eat, so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die.' Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me two choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father, just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father to eat so that he may give you his blessing before he dies." And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man, while I have smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing." His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do what I say. Go and get them for me." So he went and got them and brought them to his mother. And she prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her older son, which he had in the house, and put them on her younger son, Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed her son, Jacob, the tasty food and the bread she had made. He went to his father and said, "My father." "Yes, my son," he answered. "Who is it?" And Jacob said to his father, "I'm Esau, your firstborn. I've done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game so that you may give me your blessing." Isaac asked his son, "How did you find it so quickly, my son?" "The Lord, your God, gave me success," he replied. Then Isaac said to Jacob, "Come near so I can touch you, my son, to know whether you really are my son Esau or not." Jacob went close to his father Isaac, who touched him and said, "The voice is the voice of Jacob, but the hands are the hands of Esau." He did not recognize him, for his hands were hairy, like those of his brother Esau. So he proceeded to bless him. "Are you really my son Esau?" he asked. "I am," he replied.
Gotta love the Old Testament, don't you? As I said a couple times this morning, we have Chelsea Gordon with us to bring the word. I've known Chelsea and her family for a long time now, and have had the opportunity to interact with Chelsea, not just socially, but she was a student at Moreland when she was completing her graduate diploma in divinity, and she took part in a number of developing workshops for preachers that I ran a number of years ago. She's a practicing lawyer at the moment, but is exploring a kind of what ministry might look like, and as part of that wider kind of discernment process, I've asked her to come and speak to us this morning to present on the character of Rebekah. And I've had a bit of a preview of what we're going to hear, and I'm looking forward to what the Lord has to say to us through this. Would you please welcome Chelsea as she comes?
Well, it's wonderful to be with you today, and my husband Joel and I and our family have really enjoyed getting to know a few people over the last few weeks, and we look forward to continuing to do that in the months to come. We come today to the final week in our series, A Cloud of Witnesses, and we're zooming in on the person of Rebekah. And we've just heard the passage. It's a curious story, isn't it? It raises lots of questions for us. So let's start by zooming out and working out where Rebekah fits in the Bible. So we're in the first book in Genesis. God has given Abraham the blessing that he would be a nation and that through him, nations would be blessed. A remarkable promise. And Isaac is Abraham's son. And we zoom in the story and we meet in the moment when Isaac is preparing to pass that blessing on to his offspring. He's excited, he's going to have some food. So he says to Esau, his eldest son, "You go out and hunt for game. Get it, bring it back, and we will eat it together. And then I will give you my blessing." Isaac's wife, Rebekah, overhears this. She doesn't want the blessing for Esau. She wants the blessing for the younger son, Jacob. And so she pulls Jacob aside and she says, "Jacob, you go out, get some sheep, bring them back, I'll cook them for you. And then you can go and give the food to your dad and he'll give you the blessing." "But Mum, I'm not hairy like Esau is." "No worries," Rebecca says. "I'll put some clothes on you. You'll be fluffy, he won't know, and he'll give the blessing to you." It's a curious story, isn't it? And it's curious for a few reasons. Firstly, it's curious because Rebecca is engaging in obvious deceit. But I think there's three other reasons why it's particularly interesting to us. Firstly, they're not just talking about passing on wealth or inheritance or who gets the family home. Rebecca is scheming to pass on the blessing of God to the wrong son. Secondly, God is silent. There isn't a statement in this passage that says God liked what Rebecca did, God didn't like what Rebecca did. It's just a narrative description. So that makes it a little bit tricky for us as we're reading it. What should we think? But then the third reason, I think the most curious reason, is that God allows it to occur. God allows it to occur. What do we make of that? The blessing is passed to Jacob. Jacob goes on to be the father of the 12 tribes of Israel, and through him, all nations are blessed. And as I come to read the Bible personally, I love to ask it the really hard questions. I don't just want to gloss over it and go, "Well, the Bible says so what? I like to ask it the hard questions because I'm constantly amazed in my 30-something years, it can stand up to my scrutiny. So come with me as we bring that scrutiny to the passage and we look a little bit at the person of Rebecca. So let's zoom in and look at her. She, like this story, is a complex example. She is a real woman. She's not just a caricature. She's not just good or not just bad. She's a person in the mess of the world. Let's look at what she does. So we first meet her, and I'd love you please pull out your Bibles. We love paper Bibles here. Check what I'm saying. Let's read it together. We first meet her in chapter 22. If you look at chapter 22, verse 23, we're reading a genealogy. Lots of men about the family of Abraham. And in a little bracket, it says, Bethuel became the father of Rebecca. How curious. Her name here is a bit odd, and it almost seems as if she's going to be important. Maybe she'll be the matriarch. Let's see. We skip ahead to chapter 24 when we meet her again. And at this time in the story, Abraham is old. He's the ripe old age of 140, and his son, Isaac, is 40. Sarah has died. And the family is heartbroken about this, but especially Isaac. And it seems that more than a year has passed, and Isaac is still really sad about Sarah. Like any good father, Abraham says, "I know what we need. We need some good matchmaking. Let's get a wife." So they didn't have Bumble in those days. They didn't have the apps. The only way to get a wife was to actually go out and find one. So he calls in his most trusted servant. And Abraham says to the servant, "Go back to the land of our ancestors and find a wife for Isaac." Now, what are we selecting for? What kind of wife do we want? We'll come to that in a moment. So, like any good man going out to find a woman, the servant piles up his camels with piles of gold and piles of jewels. Good idea. And he heads off on this very long journey. And then he gets there. How's he going to pick the right one? I don't know. I think that would be a pretty heavy job. We've got to find the matriarch. It needs to be someone Isaac likes. What will I ask for? And he prays to God. Have a look in chapter 24, verse 14. This is my request. I will ask the women, I will ask one of the women, please give me a drink from your jug. If she says, yes, have a drink, and I will water your camels too, let her be the one you've selected as Isaac's wife. Now, I don't know about you, but on the dating apps, I don't find this as an option. Please give me a drink and give me a drink for the camels too. That's not an option. Why is he looking for that? Well, he's looking for someone with incredible generosity, isn't he? He's looking for someone who goes the extra mile. And he's selecting for that. And as he gets there and he's looking for that person, he's looking for a wife of noble character. It's a bit big ask. I was trying to think what an equivalent is for us now. I think it's a little bit like going to Bunnings and saying to the lady at the Bunnings counter, I'd like you to show me the things I need to build a cubby house. And then the lady says, no worries, I'll show you where they are and I'll build the cubby house. It's a big ask of generosity. That's what he's looking for. He's looking for a woman like that. And we meet Rebecca, and she is this and so much more. Have a look at her. When he asks her and she says, I will give you a drink. She says, I will water your camels too until they have had enough to drink. She's not just going to give them some water. She's going to give them enough. Now, I don't know how many camel watering experts we have here, probably several. I did some research, and in those days, Rebecca, part of her job would have been to get water for the family. She probably had a skin that was about 3 gallons. And in order to feed this many camels, the researcher's best estimate is she would have needed to walk down into the well and back up about 60 times. This is not just doing something kind. This is going the extra mile. And that's what Rebecca offers. So we see in chapter 24, Rebecca is characterized as the blessings of God's providential care in a person. I'll say that again, the blessings of God's providential care in a person. Not only does she go the extra mile, we know lots of other things about her. She treats her body like a temple. We know that she's diligent. She works with eager hands, a little bit like the wife of noble character. She's beautiful. We know this because when Isaac gets to Abimelech, he's like, no, no, that's not my wife, that's my sister. A little bit like what happened with Sarah and Abraham when Abraham says, no, Sarah's not my wife, she's my sister. She's obviously pretty. But her beauty doesn't just come from her prettiness. Her beauty comes from her character. And we know that because as the servant finds her and finds she ticks the right bumble box and says, yes, I'll come and meet your family, they get to the family and the servant starts to explain all the things God's done for Abraham and Isaac. He starts to explain how God is working through this family. And Rebecca hears about it. And she recognizes what God's doing. And she's invited by the servant to come and participate in those plans and promises. And what does she do? Yes, I'd love to. I'd love to come. And the family says, oh, let's wait a few weeks. Let's just wait a few weeks. We'll say goodbye. And she says, no. They call her in and she says, no, I'm ready to go now. I'm ready to go. This is an interesting story of a woman who acts with agency. She's not just sent, she chooses to go. She acts with eagerness. She wants to participate in the plans of God. And she does it at great personal cost, leaving her family and her friends. So I think in chapter 24, she's a character who I think we're encouraged to emulate. She acts with agency, she's eager to participate in the plans and promises of God, and it's clear that she's actually quite remarkable. Maybe a little bit similar to you coming to church this morning and hearing about what Baptist World Aid is doing in Lebanon. Hearing about the plans and promises of God there, seeing a role you might have, and standing at the coffee cart and actually booking a flight to go. That's how impulsive, well, not impulsive, but how determined and how acting she is. She's being really quite brave. And so she's presented as this remarkable woman who turns up to Isaac in his moment of grief just in time. And he loves her. He loves her. And so she's at the beginning this incredible woman who's followed God quite bravely. And that doesn't stop. It continues. Because then they marry and they struggle to have a child. Have a look with me at chapter... I want to take us to it specifically. Chapter 25, verse 21. 25, verse 21. They're together and they're waiting to have a child and it hasn't happened. And the Bible says that the sadness of that for Rebecca was so obvious that her husband starts to see it. And he goes to the Lord and he pleads with the Lord on behalf of his wife because she was unable to have children. Now let's just go on a sidebar here, okay? So come with me on a little sidebar. I just want to say Rebecca's struggle here not to have children isn't glazed over. It's not skipped. It's described simply, but it's weighty. It's a big deal. The Bible acknowledges that. But in this barrenness, there is life. So what happens next? Not only does Rebecca become pregnant, she becomes pregnant with twins. And the pregnancy is pretty tricky. I mean, I think all pregnancies are pretty tricky, but this one was also pretty tricky. And in line with the pattern of Rebecca seeking and following God, she seeks God. She comes to God in prayer and she inquires of him. And God speaks directly to Rebecca. Have a look at chapter 26, verses 23. The Lord responds to her in her moment of query, and he says, "The sons in your womb will become two nations. From the very beginning, one nation will be stronger than the other, and your older son will serve your younger son." Can I point out a few things about this? God tells this information straight to Rebecca. God doesn't tell it to Rebecca through Isaac. God doesn't tell it to Rebecca through a minister. God tells Rebecca. God's not just telling Rebecca about her children. God's telling Rebecca about the plans and purposes he has for blessing the nations through her children. And so as she has this information, I think at this stage, she's actually a remarkable example of faith. She hears about it, she inquires of the Lord, she's participated with eager and enthusiasm, and God has revealed his plans directly to her. Now we could stop here. This would be not a bad place to stop the sermon. We're excited. Up until now, people keep failing and it keeps not going well. And we've met this matriarch and we're on this moment of the precipice of promise. Wow, maybe we found the person. Maybe Rebecca and Isaac can do it in a way no one could have done before. I don't know about you. After you've heard a particularly rousing sermon from Mark or Roxy or Adam or the team on a Sunday morning, and you see the plans and promises that God has given you, and you just see it, and you're excited, and you're optimistic, and it's clear. And then life happens. That's what we have here. We have a life happens moment. In the verse that you heard read in our Bible reading by Derek, thank you, Derek, we're in a life happens moment. There's no way to avoid the fact Rebecca is deceitful. She manipulates the whole thing. So she tells Jacob to go out and get the sheep. Jacob protests, "Mom, I'm not hairy like my brother." Rebecca says, "That's okay. I've got his clothes. I'll put them on you. You'll be hairy." And so they carry on. She makes the food. She is an enabler of this deceit. Like Mark said, I practice the law. And we would say in the law, she has the mens rea. She has the mental element. She's planning this deceit. And she enables it to happen. And so I just want to call this out. Let's just stop. What do we make of Rebecca here? I want to be really clear that Rebecca acts with a complete lack of faith. She heard God tell her the blessing is for Jacob. Even hearing it directly from the mouth of God, she acts with a lack of faith and tries to manipulate the scenario herself to achieve God's plans and promises. Now, I don't know about you, but that's a hint. It's probably not the best idea. She almost acts as if Isaac giving the blessing to Esau would somehow trump God's plans, which also is weird. Like, if God plans to do it, that won't trump it. But she doesn't seem to see that. And so she acts in a moment of deceit. We need to call that out clearly. And there are consequences. There are negative consequences. The blessing is given to Jacob, of course, but there is fallout. So the fallout is Jacob and Esau have a real breaking down. Esau threatens to murder Jacob, and Jacob ends up having to leave Rebecca. So there are consequences of that deceit. The Bible is full of examples. Some that we should follow, some that we shouldn't. Rebecca in chapter 24, wow. Rebecca in chapter 7, oh. And isn't that a little bit like us? Rebecca has a little bit of good, a little bit of bad, a little bit like us, a little bit of both. And her faith in God fails big time here. And yet, God continues to work out his plans and promises in spite of Rebecca's failure. God continues his promise to Abraham to bless him and his nation and then to bless the nations through him, even though Rebecca herself falters and fails. Let's zoom ahead to chapter 28, verses 13. If you have your Bible, have a look. So we knew God was going to give the promise and the blessing to Jacob. And then we zoom ahead many, many years, and God does actually meet Jacob. God meets Jacob, and he passes the blessing through to Jacob, and he says these words to Jacob. "I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham, and the God of your father Isaac. The ground you are on belongs to you, and I am giving it to you and your descendants. They will be as numerous as the dust of the earth, to the east and the west. I am with you, and everything I have promised you, I will give." I just wanted to bookend that because God says he's going to give it to Jacob, and he does, in fact, give it to Jacob. God's providential care occurs in spite of what Rebecca has done. And yet Rebecca acts in this deceitful way in the middle. Why does she think she needs to do that? I don't know. Sometimes we're a bit like that, aren't we? What's our role in this story? I don't think we're supposed to be the judge. I don't think we're supposed to pass judgment on whether Rebecca did the right thing or not, although we can do that. I would like our role in this story to be a little bit different. I'd like us to sit in the public gallery and look at the story and see what God's doing. Because the hero in this story isn't Rebecca. The hero is God. And I think that there's one obvious takeaway. And if there's any that you take away from this message this morning, it's this. Even though Rebecca and Jacob were deceitful, Rebecca's deceit did not break the promises of God. Even though she failed, that did not break the plans and promises of God working in the world. Promises that God would work for good and to bless the nations. God's role making, sustaining, and blessing Israel is the gold that weaves through the mess of these ordinary people's lives and their ordinary stories. Don't you think Rebecca's story is a little bit like what we see in the real world? I live in the real world, in corporate Sydney, and I see power and deceit and corruption every day. I see people trying to take work from other people, and I see it all. And then I look at the Bible, and I see it there too, and God is realistic about that. I take a lot of comfort in that. It's not a world that is different to the one I see. God is speaking into the actual world that we see, and God doesn't shy away from the mess of human experience. He takes human experience seriously. And yet, even in the messiness of the real world, God acts faithfully in accordance with his plans and his promises, and his blessing is enough. There's a bit of an inkling here. I would like to suggest there is perhaps no part of human experience that is beyond the plans or promises or purposes of God. Perhaps. One commentator put it really beautifully when he said that the God of Israel has come to sojourn with the unworthy until they are brought safely home. We know that the Bible takes the serious messiness of human experience seriously, because ultimately Jesus bears the wrath of that on the cross. Rebecca's story has some implications for us, and I'd like to suggest it has some implications for your Monday. I think it has implications for your day tomorrow. There's three I'd like to call out. The first is, God's plans and promises are not fundamentally threatened by our failure. Just sit with that. God's plans and promises aren't threatened by your failure. That means we don't need to grasp or manipulate or chase. We can relax into what God has for us. Life is a gift. I can seek to be faithful with my next small faithful step. And I pray that, like Rebecca, as I see the plans of God, I act with agency and eagerness to participate in them. But I can also relax. What an antidote to a world where anxiety and chasing and pursuit is the method and the methodology of the day. We actually are people who can relax and rest in the promises of God. As a mother, I know it's easy to grasp and try to be all things to all people and do all things for my children all of the time and try to chase their success. But I am not the hero in my children's lives. God is. I am but to do the next faithful thing. So that's the first takeaway. I think the second takeaway is that there's an invitation to us for us to respond. As we see the blessings and the promises of God in the world, and we hear about his invitation for us, like Rebecca was invited at the well, we are invited to respond. And we have in her an excellent example of what faithful response might look like in chapter 24. There's an activity for us in discerning the blessings of God and acting in accordance with them. Should we go on sinning that grace might increase? No, by no means. That's not what we should be doing. But we do have an opportunity to respond. And that response, I suggest to you, is more than just something small. if it is true that God's plans and promises will work anyway and that we cannot break them, we can act with incredible bravery, can't we? We don't just have to do the small, easy thing that we're sure will work. As we see God working in the world, we can do the more courageous thing. We can do the braver thing. Like Rebecca went to the other side of the world, or you might be going with Baptist World Aid to Lebanon, or it might even be the brave thing, like I had at my desk the other day, when my graduate looked up at me and said, "What are you doing on the weekend?" And I sat in my open plan corporate office and I said, "I'm preaching." Everyone looked around and was like, "I don't know what your big brave thing looks like." That's what mine looked like. To which my graduate responded, "Wow, I'm teaching Sunday school." Your next small, faithful step may be as small as that was for me, although it felt huge. Or it might be much huger. But I think that the example of Rebecca and the story of God holding Rebecca even in her faithlessness gives us courage to relax into his promises and to have bravery to step forward in a way we might not otherwise have been confident to do, knowing that the maker and creator of life sustains us and that his plans and promises and purposes in the world will work anyway. But by his grace, he invites us to join in. He invites us to join in. I'd like to leave a question with you, and it is this, and it's very simple. Where can you see God's plans and promises at work in the world? And what brave thing would you do if you believed you couldn't break them?
Thanks for listening to this sermon podcast. We hope you found inspiration and encouragement, and God used this message to speak to you. If you want to connect more with GBC, you can follow us on social media or contact us via our website. You can also get to know some of the people from our church community through the We Are the Church podcast. Real stories of real people sharing how Jesus has shaped and transformed their life. We pray you experience the transforming power of Jesus in your life and pray that God blesses you today.